Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the voices of New Africa. Free the land. 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 Free the land.
And we are back. Once again, my friend, this is the Voices of New Africa. You are listening to your host, Brother Yera Amati, a.k.a. Prophecy. And as always, this is the show that is dedicated to the liberation of New African people. And always, every week, we will be joined by some of the brightest minds in the New African community. And on this day in African History Month, we want to honor, we want to acknowledge, we want to recognize one of the great pioneers, one of the great soldiers, one of our shining princes, one of our shining prince, the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey. As always, as every week, we will be acknowledging and honoring one of the great individuals who are instrumental in the liberation struggle for our people. And today is Marcus Garvey. So let's get into it. The great Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey. He was born in August 17th, 1887, in St. Anne's Bay, Jamaica.
All right, Brother Dolly. I was trying to see. I might have gotten this mixed up.
Hold on a second.
You were on the broadcast today? Yes. I'm listening.
Okay, all right, I'm back. Seemed like we had some feedback. But as I said, Marcus Messiah Garvey, he was one of the best examples of black nationalism. Born in August 17, 1887, in St. Anne's Bay, Jamaica. He was an advocate for self-determination, self-government, independent, and the unification of African people in Africa as well as all over the diaspora. His work in philosophies sparked a global movement known as Garveyism. In 1912, he founded the UNIA, which stands for the Universal Negro Improvement Association. There was goals at uniting African people, self-government, establishing an independent African nation controlled by our people. In 1918, he began to publish his newspaper, widely distributed, known as the Negro World. In 1919, he launched his own independent shipping company, known as the Black Star Line, which would establish trade commerce between Africans in America, the Caribbean, South and Central America, Canada, and Africa. In other words, he created a shipping company in 1919 that would establish trade on a global level. He started the Negro Factory Association, which were a series of factories that would manufacture commodities that would be traded throughout globally. By 1920, his organization of the UNIA had millions of members. In fact, he held an international convention in Madison Square Garden, which with a full house, packed house. He sent delegates to other countries. He is one of the best examples of African independence, of self-determination, of nationhood. And of course, he gained so much power that he became a threat to the government, which led to what we know as trumped up charges of mail fraud, which landed him in prison and being deported. But his influence expanded globally. He influenced organizations such as the Nation of Islam, the Rastafarian Nation. He predicted the coming of Haile Selassie and several of the African leaders who would eventually lead to independence of African nations such as Ghana. So on this day, we honor our great shining prince, the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey.
Yep.
Which leads us to our topic for today. Because the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey advocated for independence. He advocated for separation. He advocated that we create our own self-governing, independent African nation. So the question that I want to pose to the panel, in which I see we are joined by some bright minds, minds such as the brother Fadali, the brother Kakayi, Sister Ayodele, Sister Saunksa. So what I want to pose to my panel is, did the strategy of integration, did it actually do more harm to our people than good? I mean, because even one of the most well-known integrationists, Dr. Martin Luther King, by the time, you know, when it was close to his death, he's quoted as stressing concerns. He said that he feared that he's integrating his people into a burning house. So did Martin Luther King integrate us into a burning house? Did this tactic of integration, this strategy of integration, did it actually do more harm than good? So I want to open that question up to the panel. Do I have my brother Kakayi on the line? Brother Kakayi.
Free the land. Yes, you do have
free, brother. Free the land. I will, no doubt. Brother Kakayi, what do you think? What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts? Did integration do more harm?
As always, you know, in order to determine or pinpoint be specific with the problem, you have to go to the origins of that problem. And we all know that we have a problem as a people here in the United States. New Africans are always on the bottom end of every social aspect of life because we have decided to take on a solution to a problem that hasn't worked. We have to understand, as conquered people in oppressed land, that at some point we have to recognize our mistakes. We have to look at history and find out what our mistakes are so we can determine how to change the conditions and circumstances that we are in today. One of the mistakes we made out of many was that we integrated. We have had less success in self-determination since integration. We have an educational system in this country that has withered away to a point where they have total control of our youth. That's a disgrace to our people. We have to understand that when we started integrating, things have begun to be worse. I mean, there's more of our brothers and sisters incarcerated today because of integration. There are more of our brothers and sisters in poverty because of integration. There are more of our people because of integration that are, it's just everything about us on a social scale is worse because of integration. And I thought that was the solution to the problem, but we found out through experience, through our history, that there wasn't a solution. And brother Martin Luther King realized that before he got on his dying bed, that there was a necessity for us to band together as a community, as a people, as a nation, to determine the solutions to our problem and correct them within our community, because the solution lies in us, not through outsiders, not through integrating, not through turning the other cheek and making sure that they like us or their attitude towards us will change.
we have to recognize that these people have been the way they are from the beginning of us encountering them. So we need to make a change. And integration is one of those things we need to change.
Exactly. Well said, brother. You know, when I'm looking at the whole integration, you know, policy, the integration strategy, when you, speaking of Marcus Garvey and what he was able to accomplish, the things that he was able to accomplish on a global level, we haven't been able to duplicate that. Hold on a second. I'm getting a lot of background noise from somebody. Let me go mute this out. Pardon me for just 1 second, y'all. But like we said, we were talking about Marcus Garvey and everything that he was able to accomplish. And we have not been able to duplicate what Brother Garvey has been accomplished. And this was in the 1910s and in 1920. You look at, we talked about what happened in Black Rosewood. But look at the level of economic independence that in 1921, during the heart of the segregation era, this African community had accomplished. I mean, you had Black millionaires, Black banks, Black everything. And that's kind of the cornerstone of nationhood, is you have to have control. You have to have control over a landmass. You have to have control over the industry. You have to have control over the systems, the economics, the political, the social systems in your community, in order for you to get yourself straight. So I want to continue the conversation. Do I have my sister Iodeli on the line? Sister Iodeli, are you here? Sister Iodeli, are you on the line? Okay, Sister Sa'aksa. Hold on, I'm experiencing a little technical difficulty.
Can you hear me? Free the land.
There you go. Free the land, sister.
Yes.
You can go.
Well, to expound, can you hear me?
Yes, I got you.
Okay, to expound on what you were talking about earlier in terms of the era of Marcus Garvey and the heart of segregation, where we had the different Black communities with Black millionaires, and we were building for self and doing for self. We have to always take things into a historical perspective. So if the fabric of this system, that America that we live in, is slave, Black people have always been of the slave class, right? We've always been in the slave class. So from segregation, and the only way that this particular system is going to work is if Black people remain in the slave class. And so during segregation, because we were forced to build for self, we were forced to do what we needed to do for ourselves. Like you said, we built massive Black communities that everybody thrived. We had everything for ourselves. We had our own banks. We had, you name it, we had it. But because this particular system, America, that we live in, wants to keep us at a slave class, because at that point we're not at slave class. We're building for self. We're not slaves. But the only way for this system is to work is for us to remain slaves. So that's, they played integration card. That Martin Luther King was just a pawn for the integration card. Why? Because that was a card that had to be played in order for us to remain in the slave class. Because even our high schools during segregation prepared us for the world. We didn't have to go to college. We had vocational schools. All the Black schools were vocational schools where you learned trades, real trades, to build up our community. But once integration happened, that went out the window. We integrated. We took our ability to build for self away. We're back at play. We're back at the play class. That's the only way that this particular system works. Is if they're the slave class. So no,
exactly.
It did nothing for us. It did nothing, absolutely nothing for us. Period. It was just a card played, a brilliant card played. You know, because of course, us being who we are, proud of who we are, hey, we shouldn't have to be subjected to not being able to go where white people go, or not being, you know, because that was the reality of our world. So they played that card that put us back in slave class.
And to clarify, so everyone understand that today, you know, slavery today is simply known by another name, and that name is mm-hmm. neocolonialism. You know, and neocolonialism is simply white power with a black face. So you can have black politicians, you know, black governors, black mayors, even a black president. But still, the relationship between the people and the system remain the same, which is a colonial relationship. So exactly, and we have to understand that we are conquered people. And knowing that we are a conquered people, we have to understand the nature of a conquered people, because the nature of a conquered people is to look up, to uphail, to glorify the conqueror's civilization. So one of the things that happened, and by no means are we upholding the system of segregation. Segregation was a terrible system. It was detrimental. You know, but under this system, African people practice collective or cooperative economics. And because we practice cooperative economics, then it allowed us to prosper and to create real black communities, because we don't have real black communities anymore as a result of integration. Because of real black community, a real New African community is a community in which the economics, the education, the politics, the social systems all are controlled by the people of that community. That does not exist in America. You have residents, you have areas, you have land masses with a large concentration of African people. But the people who live in these communities are not controlled over the politics, not controlled over the economics, not controlled over the education in their community. So this is one of the effects of the integration movement. And as a consequence, in understanding the nature of a conquered people, understanding that the conquered people always glorifies the conqueror's civilization, once integration ended, once segregation ended, and this conquered people were allowed to go integrate with their oppressor, many of the African-owned businesses, many of things that were owned by Africans, by our people, shut down, because our people immediately ran to the white people, because we are under that belief that white is better, under that misunderstanding, that misconception as a result of being indoctrinated within the system of racism and white supremacy. So you know, that these are important things to understand. So do I have my sister Ayodele on the phone?
Free the land, brother.
Free the land. I hear my will. Okay, good to have you back, sister.
Thank you.
So what are your thoughts? Did this system of integration, did it do harm to our people?
I believe that all African people here in America came out of a period of time, historically speaking, that yes, we were segregated. Yes, there were Jim Crow laws, put upon us, both here in the South and in the North. I believe that as a result of those Jim Crow laws and the separation of the races, because that's what it was, segregation is separation of the races by design, people were looking for, not that we didn't have resources, we were looking for better resources, more opportunities. However, I don't think many of the elders who pushed for the desegregation of public housing, desegregation of schools, anticipated or realized that once we decided that we wanted a piece of this so-called American dream, our culture, our way of doing business, our businesses in itself, the atmosphere of schools was going to be given up. We had to give up many of those things in order to work better jobs. Many of us have forgotten that many of us were token, not our people weren't blanketly allowed to go into every sector of business, economics, banking, whatever you want to call it. And to, you know, buttress upon what the other two speakers talked about, he gave up a lot. I remember in one of the classes being told that when we so-called desegregation of school systems happened and busing began to be instituted, there were almost 20,000 black, or should we say African people, African teachers that lost their jobs in the South because the busing occurred. Children were being sent to different institutions. There was no longer the community schools, and eventually the community businesses, the community networks began to fall and disintegrate because we wanted to move in better neighborhoods. We thought that the status of moving to different parts of the city, away from the community, away from that nucleus of your African culture, a family, economic season, was holding us to a certain degree. And yes, some of us did get better jobs, some of us did do this, but as a whole, when we look back upon the effects on the entire race or community, integration has done us a great disservice, because as we gave up our communities, we also gave up that influence on our educational practices, the of course, always making sure that we had our heroes talked about in our own school systems. A lot of that has not occurred. And another thing is that Marcus Garvey always talked about, in order for us to really be a nation, you have to have land, you have to have your factories, you have to have your grocery stores, you have to have your bakery, you have to have all of those things that a society needs, hospital, everything that we were forced to have, but we just lacked better materials. And I think that's where we went wrong. And look at what we have today. Everything that we have, food, clothing, shelter, housing, is controlled outside of the community. And we are dependent upon others to provide those things for us, when before, based on a segregated system, based on the need that we had to provide those things for ourselves, and we didn't have it, we had that creativity to build those things, to provide those things, those essential needs, particularly food and shelter and even clothing. So those are the disparities that we see so many years after the so-called integration movement. And we have to admit that there are some things that we didn't anticipate. There are some things that went wrong. Look at what we have now in the communities and in our major cities. So integration, no. A few people got a few nice jobs, but we lost that essential, that one essential, creed or motto. When I was told growing up, you always get your profession, go to school, make sure that when you get your profession, you come back to the community and you serve. That does not happen. It's now become more individualistic, individuals making it versus communities making it, cooperating, having that those cultural standards, those moral standards that made us unique, even in the face of being under capitalism and imperialism and white supremacy in this society. We still had a niche of ourselves because we came through a common experience We are the descendants of enslaved Africans that had to come up and find a way after the Emancipation Act. So, no, integration did not work. So the solution now is to find a simpler way to make sure that we identify where we want to build a new nation for new African people here in America and be connected with the rest of the African world.
Exactly, well said. And a point that you really nailed is about how we're under a system now that is based on the individual. Because if you understand the economic system, the present economic system of today, which is capitalism, we understand that capitalism is based on the individual and not the collective. It benefits the individual over the collective. And if you see, you know, what's going on in our community today, there are individuals who have become very successful. And these individuals are put forth on a pedestal right in front of us while the masses may be struggling, while overall our communities are not in great shape. Overall, poverty is rampant within our community. Overall, crime, mass incarceration, police brutality, all of these issues are rampant within our communities. But within the system, they always upheld these few individuals who have been successful. And they put that as a representation of the whole race. As if we're all, look how far we have come. And it paints a distorted picture of our community. Because you have a masses, a large percentage of the people who go ignored. You know, in these masses, these people are only used to justify setting up police states. You know, we zero in on them. Well, I won't say we, but the mass media zero in on the poverty, the crime, and all that thing to justify the mass incarceration and justify setting up police states and things of this nature. But I want to talk to my brother Fadali. Brother Fadali, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I want to say that, hey, yes, I think that, we want to wax about what was in the past, and a lot of it was not in the past. The Depression, so-called Great Depression, wiped out much of the black economy in America right before World War II. And it was after World War II, it was during World War II, that we had a segment of our community, a class of our people. We got to be careful about our we's when we talk about saying we didn't make a decision. You know, a certain class of people said that they were going to march on Washington, you know, and so the move to desegregate the armed forces, came into being, and you know, and so Africans were, you know, pressed into the World War II as soldiers, and still you had, you know, segregation still existing. Now, in terms of looking at the economy, looking at where we, you know, like I said, most of the banks, because we talked about Black Wall Street last week, about the attack and all of that. But during the so-called Depression, we were hit harder than any other group. We always are hit harder than any other group when you have an economic downturn. So, but a segment of our class, the house slave or the house Negro element, always wanted to assimilate into the white society, you know, because they will always say that we were inextricably tied to white people and da-da-da-da. So you have that element that became influential under what they call civil rights. And in the movement, the masses of people were not going for integration. They were going for desegregation, you know, which is a restriction of a whole people by the system and our people were drawn into the struggle for desegregation. Now, the United States had a problem, you know, because the United States said it was a citadel of democracy and said that to the world. And so when the desegregation movement started, the United States, you know, wanted to preserve its so-called, quote, image for democracy, and they decided that they were going to go ahead and concede to the so-called democratic rights movement in our community. But then there was another thing Brother Kwame Ture used to say. He said integration, it was integration into the capitalist economy, because the capitalist economy needed the capital that was, you know, being held by Africans under segregation. So we've got to be very clear. We didn't make the decision for integration. We didn't have a strategy. I'm talking about the we in terms of mass of people. Did not have a strategy for integration. The capitalists decided that it would be beneficial to them in terms of their image in the world to allow democratic rights, civil rights, to be enacted so that they could, you know, change the image. And, you know, and I remember Malcolm was talking about John Kennedy being the fox, you know, the analogy of the fox and the wolf. And so the fox, you know, conceded and acceded to the so-called democratic rights through the Civil Rights Bill that he was assassinated before it was enacted, but in 1964, because of his assassination, you know, Johnson went and pushed the 1964 Civil Rights Bill. And we had to be really careful. Now, let me say this. We have always had this class of what E. Franklin Frazier called the black bourgeoisie, who were aspiring to be capitalists, wanted to be capitalists within the system, but they were like not real capitalists. They were like a caricature of capitalism. In other words, they were doing conspicuous consumption. So we became consumers, you know, and they were the consumer class. And so the masses of people now are looking up to that class, and the masses of people have become conspicuous consumers. And this is not just us in America, but this is throughout the world. They have imposed this integration into the capitalist system on the whole African world. On Africa and the islands and everywhere else that we exist. And we got to be careful when we talk about, because Malcolm was advocating separation. The separation was not segregation. Separation means we had to have our own nation, our own land. We have to do self-determination. And it was the self-determination advocates that were defeated, you know, in the aspect of under the slogan of black power, and black power became adulterated to being participation in the system. So we, as New Africans, we understand there are no remedies within the system. There's no way that we can exist upon the capitalist system, the imperialist system, the neo-colonial system, and to be able to come to self-determination. We would have to break. There had to be a revolution. And that's why it's important that we begin to, you know, understand that, because we can wax about the past and thinking that, oh, yeah, you know, we really had all this, you know, collective, you know, capitalist. But, you know, to a point where they saw that we would be able to have any kind of power, they moved to crush that move, that economic part of it, and to also restrict us in every kind of way. And so, therefore, when, you know, and I agree with what people are saying, that the King Nim did not understand the consequences of their advocacy in terms of relations between Africans and the Europeans, Africans and the imperialists, Africans and the capitalists, and ultimately, you know, King came to regret what happened in terms of how they were pushing for a kind of assimilationist type policy, because they wanted to have the goodwill of all whites in acceding to the civil rights. And so consequently, when he tried to move toward economic democracy, he was assassinated, you know, because economic democracy is not, I mean, for all people, is not a policy of an imperialist, colonialist, a neo-colonialist policy. It's not, you know, in other words, you know, like if you're talking about sharing all the wealth, which that's socialism, that smacks of socialism, then you're going to be killed. You're going to be eliminated. And we have to, you know, understand that, and that the people, our people, were trying to do economic democracy, thinking that it could take place in this capitalist society that's based on genocide and enslavement of our labor. And so we have to be, I mean, when we do our we sometimes, you know, we mix them up into saying we made a decision, you know, to go. Now, when you look at the businesses, when you look at even the millionaires like Gaston, who had hotels in the South, and other, all of them were supporting the desegregation movement. They did not have any idea that it would have the impact that is, you know, in terms of the masses of people being allowed to go into the white places and the white spaces, and that, you know, in other words, because in the economic system of capitalism, if you got you can go to cheap consumer goods, the poor are gonna go to the cheap consumer goods. You know, by mm-hmm. you know, by definition, you know, you're opening up a vista for the white economy. And I agree with what people are saying about individualism. Now they have pushed us into a system in which the individual is valued above everything else, above the collective. And so therefore we have become individuals, and the only thing we can do is, we're saying free the land, get our people to understand that we got to go back to what Malcolm said, the base of all power is land. And therefore we must organize our nation, and then we will gain control of our economy. So we got to be careful in our characterization, because we can get frustrated talking about the, you know, the masses, that the individuals are doing this and that and other. Well, we got to organize the masses. We have to organize the cooperative economy. We got to organize all those things that will be necessary to pull our people out of this lethargy that they have pushed us into. But it was never, I'll just say, it was never a strategy. It became a strategy of capitalism, just like in the Western European imperialists had a strategy of decolonization, they called it, you know, but it became neocolonialism. So we are basically under the same auspices. They say, oh, we're going to have democracy, and we're going to let them participate in the so-called political, you know, politics. So therefore, like now they think they're part of the system, and they think that there are remedies that can be exhausted in the system. But we know that all remedies have been exhausted. That there's no remedy that is going to bring us into self-determination. It's only going to be done through revolutionary activity and the creation of revolutionary organization and the creation of revolutionary programs in the process of overthrowing capitalism, imperialism, colonialism, neocolonialism, and fascism. All of those things have to be attacked by us, and then we have to understand we're talking about building a socialist society. And in building a socialist society, we have to overthrow capitalism first, because socialism cannot exist in a capitalist economy. That's my take on it.
Thank you, and I appreciate your analysis of the topic. We really are way over time, so quickly I want to give everybody an opportunity to kind of have your last word on it. Do I have my brother Kakaye? My brother Kakaye, are you still on the line, brother?
Yes, free the land, brother. Free the land.
Free the land. I am my will,
and I think the master teacher, Fidalis, summed it up. In all,
And, you know, we have to recognize what he's saying, you know. And if we don't understand, there's a reason why we don't know our history. There's a reason why we're shunned to talk about the things that happened to our people. There's a reason why we don't have a system set up and designed for us to know who we are as a people and what we're capable of doing. Because in that history, we'll come up with the solution. And so this system is doing exactly what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to exploit and oppress us. And one of the key factors is not exposing us to our history so we would know the origins of our problems, know why we're in the condition we are in today, and come up with the right solution to the problem. And that's segregation.
Or separation.
Separation. Exactly.
Yes,
separation.
Sir. Yes, sir. Separation. Yeah, because we don't want to uphold this segregation system. You know, we don't do that.
Yes.
Sister Saanxa, are you still online? Sister?
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Get a quick last word.
So real quick, we as a people, we have to take back our human right of self-determination and free the land and separate ourselves. Step out of the box of this system of white supremacy.
Well said. And let me go to my sister, Mama Iodeli. Are you still there?
Yes, I am. Free the land, brother.
Free the land, I am, I will. So, can I get a last word from you?
Just making sure that through education, making sure that through political understanding, or we say overstanding of who we are as a people here in America, knowing what capitalism is, how we are being exploited, and really tuning in to historically what was our role and function as far as launching an empire, making sure that we know that we were the impetus. We were the economic foundation of building this nation, even understanding how we continue to build an empire through our lack of knowledge of what this system of capitalism, imperialism, neocolonialism, and white supremacy is, and how we are being utilized to uphold an empire, a world empire, and the need to separate from this empire, to have self-determination, to make sure that we link with all African people. Over 133 countries are, because of the transatlantic slave trade, is occupied by people of African descent, and how that when we gain that knowledge and understanding that we rule the land in which we inhabit, that we determine the resources, the economics, based on scientific socialism, that we will do our part as a world African movement to rid ourselves of capitalism, imperialism, and white supremacy.
Well said, well said. And of course, our master teacher, Brother Fadali. You still there, Brother Fadali?
Yes, I'm still here. And I appreciate what everybody has said, and you know, in their analysis. And, you know, racism, white supremacy, the global system of capitalism and imperialism and neocolonialism must be overthrown. And we must also have that vision of scientific socialism, understanding that socialism, we will have control of all the resources that we are on, all the places where, and all the spaces that we occupy. That would be the only way that we could be able to be a self-determined nation, to the point of where we understand that once we are liberated, once we liberate ourselves, we'll have a liberation of the world from that system, from that global system, and the creation of a system that, on which we will be the foundation of freedom and an example of freedom for all other peoples on the earth. Because until this beast called America,